we come back to identity, right? Like, who am I? And ultimately, whose am I? And if I don't have that question answered, I'm going to get sideways or derailed somewhere. I think as guys, we're wired to want to perform and achieve. I think we're also wired to earn. So I think those things make it really hard for us to accept the gift of grace. It's really hard for our identity to not be wrapped up in what we do or what we accomplish or how we perform. I'm sorry, the guys I'm leading, the people I'm working with, are not a threat to revealing who I really am. My wife, very much so. My wife knows me better than anybody. She can expose who I am as a man. At work, I probably potentially have some type of power over the people I'm leading. Your kids don't care, but your wife doesn't care. They're following you because of who you are, more so than positional authority.
Welcome to the Empowered Manhood Podcast, where men rediscover courageous masculinity. Pull up a chair as we gain strength from the stories of God working in the lives of ordinary men today. These men have discovered that in a world of superficiality and isolation, we need authentic brotherhood to gain strength for the battles we face every day. Brought to you by the ministry of CLC, which challenges men to an uncommon pursuit of Christ, welcome to Empowered Manhood. Hey guys, here's a question for you. Are you a man or are you a boy? In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 11, Paul writes, "When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me." So as you think about yourself in that context, once again, do you see yourself as a man or do you still see yourself as a boy? Hey guys, welcome to the Empowered Manhood Podcast. My name is Mike Hatch, and I will be joined shortly with my amazing co-host, Amazon bestselling author, Chris Bollinger. Today, we are interviewing Kyle Stark. Kyle is the president at Stark Contrast Consulting Company, where he helps good leaders who want to drive great cultures. That's what he's been doing since about 2020, but before that, he's actually been doing it longer than that. His consulting business has been around since 2020. Prior to that, he was with the Pittsburgh Pirates as the assistant GM, and himself, he worked very closely with Clint Hurdle during the 2013, 14, 15 playoff runs of the Pittsburgh Pirates, really had a huge impact on the organization. Before the Pittsburgh Pirates, he was also with the Cleveland Indians, who he's been around Major League Baseball for a while. And today, one of the things we wanted to talk to him about is turning boys into men. And that's actually what his emphasis was when he was with the Pirates as the assistant general manager and overseeing the development of their farm league. That was kind of their mantra. Their goal was to make men out of boys in the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. And today, when he shares, he'll of course share his fence post story, but one of the key elements that we talk about is our identity as men. Where do we find our identity? I think you're going to get a ton out of that conversation and those thoughts that he shares. So I'm looking forward to you guys hearing our interview here with Kyle Stark. Also, hey, thank you for listening once again. And those of you who've reached out to say hi and interact with us, man, we're grateful for your feedback. Just want to give a shout out to Clint and Jared out in Kansas, Ernesto in Colorado Springs, and Stacy in Arizona. Man, it was great talking to you guys and getting your feedback and getting to come alongside of you now as you're thinking through discipleship in your own churches. So if you would like to reach out and talk with us, please do so. My email again is mhatch@clchq.org. That's mhatch@clchq.org. I love getting to talk with you guys, listeners out there who want to reach out. I love hearing your stories and getting your feedback about our podcast. How are we doing? Are we covering the topics that you want to cover? Are we covering those things that you're really interested in and want to learn more about? Are there people that you want us to reach out to talk to that we haven't spoken to yet? Of course, there's a lot of people out there we haven't spoken to. So let us know if there's someone you want us to talk to. And then lastly, If you want to find out more about CLC, you can visit our website at clchq.org. Please remember, this is a listener-supported podcast. So go visit us at clchq.org. You can find out more about the organization and you can donate. Click on the big blue donate button and then click the drop-down menu in the box that pops up. Pick the national fund. And then in the description, just put Empowered Manhood. That way we will know that you contributed through the podcast. And we're really, really grateful for any of the support that you'd be willing to help provide for the ongoing production of this podcast, as well as the ministry that is discipling men all over the world. All right, guys. Hey, again, thank you for joining us. I cannot wait for you guys to hear this. Here is our interview now with Kyle Stark. Hey, Kyle Stark, welcome to the Empowered Manhood podcast.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. Good to have you. For those who don't know, Kyle and I have had somewhat of a relationship. And previously, we went to the same church and I had you speak at one of our events. Worked actually pretty closely with your wife with developing the small group study guide curriculum, actually, during that time. So really got to know her in a sense more, but then got to know you through her as well. So just personally, I have a ton of respect for you. Really grateful that you'd make time to come on and share with us. And I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say and what God's doing in and through you right now. Let's start, first of all, just so guys can kind of get to know who you are. We start this with every guest we have on. We ask them to share their fence post story. And so imagine a fence that sits along a property and you've got the horizontal pieces, but they're held up by each of the vertical pieces. And those vertical pieces are normally more substantial and weight bearing. And those are symbolize the impactful things that have either happened to us that or we happened to, or people who influenced us and made us who we are today. And so we'd love to hear a few of your fence posts. And what brought you to this point and how God kind of molded Kyle Stark into what you are today?
Yeah, well, I think that is an ongoing story as it is for all of us. And I love that twist on the fence post. We always use the idea of the turtle on the fence post. Ooh, you're driving down the road. How does that turtle end up there? Well, somebody else put it there, you know, just as far as honor and influences. So grew up small town in Pennsylvania. Huge impact was the household I grew up in. My dad, my mom, both God-fearing people. I grew up in a churched home, but not just a churched home. Both my parents led worship, taught Sunday school. You know, I've told people before that my dad's the best example of Christ of any man I've ever been around. Just, you know, a man who worked in the oil field. So it was a man's man, played sports, coached sports. Also was, you know, teaching Sunday school class, whatever else. So my parents had a huge impact on me from a faith standpoint, became a believer young. My mom led me to Christ when I was really young. And so that walk has been, it's pretty much all I've ever known. So that's just, it's cool to see that journey from that perspective, as opposed to, hey, I was drunk in a ditch somewhere and God brought me somewhere. And again, I think it's awesome how God uses each of our stories differently to show different sides of him. But that's all I've ever known. Grew up in a family. Yeah, that sport was a big part of things. I fell in love with baseball early, wanted to play, wanted to be a big leaguer. Realized much sooner than I wanted that that wasn't going to happen. And so I wanted to pursue a life in baseball and at the highest level. You know, I think another fence post, if you will, in my life, and it's not even so much a people or an experience, but kind of a theme, is just this quest for, ultimately for me, it was a quest for perfection, but a quest for excellence of achieving. And what did that look like? And, you know, God's continued to help clarify for me what that has looked like in my life. But went away to school, wanted to get away from small town, went to Ball State in Muncie, Indiana. I went there thinking I was going to play sports, was engaged in sport, but ultimately I think I went there to be around, you know, some people to influence my ultimate journey. The assistant AD there had been a longtime baseball guy, got me connected in baseball with some different people. But ultimately I saw what church could be like in Muncie, Indiana, Orchard Hill. Big church. I'd never been in a big church, a Methodist church, which I grew up in Methodist church, but it was not about being a part of the Methodist church. It was about pursuing the gospel. Experienced church in a different way there. From there, decided I needed, because I hadn't played, and you know, this is 20 years ago now, baseball was very much a you played, and then when you got done playing, you coached or scouted and went that path. And since that wasn't going to be my journey, I felt like I needed to differentiate myself. And so went to University of Toledo, went to law school there. Didn't fit, which I think is another common theme probably of not necessarily fitting in terms of where I was at, because I was going to school with a bunch of people who wanted to practice law. I knew I did not want to. I had zero interest in practicing law. Graduated from law school. And then from there, got an opportunity to go to St. Bonaventure and get my MBA and coach at St. Bonaventure. Knew the head coach there. We were friends, which another common theme of, I mean, he's my dad's age. So, but I grew up going to his camp and then running his camps and hunting with him and just connected with him. And he had his GA, his graduate assistant position was open. And so he said, hey, if you want it, feel free. And so got a chance to go do that. And then from there, wrote 30 general managers and said, hey, I want to work in baseball. And old school writing letters and had a few clubs reach out, one of them being the Cleveland Indians. And when I finished up at St. Bonaventure, we won the conference, only time in school history. 2 weeks later, we're playing in Miami at a regional. The next week, I'm in Cleveland. I had just gotten married. My wife and I, Heather, who is definitely another fence post in my life. We were apart from each other for the first 2 years of our marriage. Because here I was with a law degree and an MBA and making, whatever, $600 a month in Cleveland. So went and started with Cleveland, was in Cleveland for 3.5 years. Perfect timing, small front office, progressive front office, good people, some really good baseball people as well. And I was in an office with, I think, six guys that went on to become general managers.
Wow.
And huge opportunity. They just allowed me to do a lot of different things. Yeah, good experience, but also just a lot of appreciation for that group of guys. Mm-hmm. And worked with Neil Huntington, who ended up getting the general manager job in Pittsburgh. He was allowed to take one person with him. He chose me as a 28-year-old farm director to go run the minor leagues. Yeah, we walked into an environment, worst team in the big leagues with the worst farm system with no money, and said, hey, have at it. And able to be a part of 12 years in Pittsburgh, returning that organization back to what it was and having a ton of success, and then ultimately getting asked, we want a new group to come in and do this. And so seeing both sides of it, I've joked with people that I've been the genius that's come in, and I've also been the idiot that needs to get pushed out and experiencing both of those things. And so 12 years in Pittsburgh, raised our two boys there. We've got two boys. My oldest is Chance. He's 23. He's in the Marines. And then our youngest is Coop. He's 16, a junior in high school. Moved down to Bradenton a few years ago and currently working with leaders that are trying to drive great culture and pouring into specifically men, but leaders that want to impact the people around them. And I referenced Heather before. You referenced Heather, Mike, but my wife, Heather, definitely a huge fence post who has continued to challenge me, shown me a side of God that I probably didn't appreciate and value as much, and has also challenged me to be a better man and the man I need to be. So that's some fence posts along the way.
That's great, man. That's great. And I might be speaking out of turn. If I get this wrong, I'll edit it out. But did your family have a role in bringing Heather to faith?
Yeah. So my wife, Heather was married previously and had Chance. And ultimately that marriage didn't work out for a whole nother story. And Heather's by far the smarter, better, more talented member of this relationship. She's got a PhD in communication and was teaching in college. Yep. She had moved to, she was teaching at the University of Pittsburgh at Bradford, which is my hometown. And she was in my dad's Sunday school class. And so she was a new believer. But quick story on us is she's in my dad's Sunday school class. She's a single mom, not great apartment situation, whatever else. She brings it up in prayer 1 week. She needs to find a new place. My parents showed up at her doorstep later that day and said, hey, we'd like you to come move in with us. All three of our kids are out of the house if you want to move in with us. And Heather's first thought was, these people are weird. I don't know these people that well.
Yeah.
Long story short, she says no. She then says yes, but only for a month till I find a new place. She and Chance lived with my parents for 9 months. Got a chance to see family in a different light. We've both joked with my mom it was a ploy to get the two of us together.
Yeah.
But then we ended up getting, because that was the same time I was back. I was coaching St. Bonaventure, so I was back in the area, and we ended up. Yeah, getting married.
That's so cool. Yeah, I just remember when we would talk, she spoke very highly of you and your family, especially, and their influence on her. That's right. Thank you for jogging my memory. I don't have to edit that out. That's great. That was right. And then, okay, so then I want to just touch on something too, because ride the wave of the baseball wave for a while. For those baseball fans, maybe this will be appealing to you as well. You brought this kind of new approach to developing the minor league system. And can you tell us a little bit about what that looked like? Because I think maybe for some of our listeners that might be really fascinating. And I know it is also reflective of who you are and how you do what you do today too. But there was some controversy here in Pittsburgh when you came in to start implement this process. What was the controversy about? Why was it such a big deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an element of this that is perception, and some of it's, you know, reality. So, and I think there's an element too of, you know, I think all of us probably at some time think we're doing something revolutionary and different, and it really isn't. You come back to some, I always hold fast, Ecclesiastes is a great humbler for me in terms of nothing new under the sun, just to check ourselves a little bit. You know, I got hired young farm director. I mean, I don't know that there was a single coach that I was responsible for leading that was, everybody was older than I was. And so some unique situations there. The timing of when I got hired, baseball has historically been a scouting-based game. So it's all about finding the right players. If they're good enough, great. If they're not, too bad. And so the minor leagues was always a weeding out process of weeding out players that weren't good enough, and the cream rises to the top. That was kind of the, you know, the philosophy. Mm-hmm. And I came in with just more of a heart for coaching. You know, I think, again, baseball's history with coaching has been, I mean, the head coach is called a manager. He's not a head coach. You know, in professional baseball, you're not referred to as coach. You're referred to as by name. The scouting influence was significant. Mm-hmm. And so we just came in with more of a proactive, intentional development mindset that we can help players get better. We came in with the mindset of that it was going to be holistic, that we were going to develop the whole man. We felt like we were, at the end of the day, we want to win in Pittsburgh. That means we have to be able to bet on each other. We're betting on people. That means we've got to bet on men. We got to bet on championship people. So just because you're talented doesn't mean, number one, that you're going to reach your potential, and number two, that we can necessarily count on you and bet on you. So it was very much a holistic approach as well. And then I think the last part that was probably a little bit unique or different was, you know, this idea of pursuing truth rather than tradition. Value tradition, honor tradition, have a ton of respect for those who have come before, but we're not going to just do it because that's the way it's always been done. We wanted to pursue what was the best way. You know, so I think that was met with resistance at first internally. We were able to navigate that, I think, and then impacted that. The cool thing for me is you look at the landscape now, like people are obsessed with development and obsessed with coaching and think there's huge opportunities for gains on that side of it throughout the game. And I'm not going to say we're responsible for that. I do think we helped change the narrative with some of that. But part of that was we were willing to look in different places rather than just baseball to figure out what does right look like, one of which was the military and specifically special forces community. Mm-hmm. Not from the militaristic, authoritarian, whatever else, although I do think that the best in the world are very disciplined and very accountable and commit to something bigger than themselves. Like those things are all real. And I think sometimes we want to push that to the side. But really the draw was that the special forces community was all about trying to be the best in the world and figuring out the best way to do that. And it was about the same time where they were exploring more of a holistic approach to developing their soldiers. And so we just started sharing best practices and impacted both spaces. One of which was we had a group come in and it was a 2-day man development, leadership development, team development. They say at Navy SEAL training, I think it's offensive to SEALs to say we did 2 days of SEAL training, but it was the same time that our major league club was in the midst of the worst September in the history of baseball. It looked like we were going to finally, for the people who aren't familiar, Pirates are known for the longest streak of not being in the playoffs, 20 years. We did not own all 20 of those, our group. We did contribute to some of them. And we thought we were in the midst of, we were going to turn the tide in 2012, and it looked like it was going to happen, and we collapsed in September. Mm. Well, at the same time that was happening, we were doing 2 days of training with some SEALs in Bradenton, Florida, with our guys furthest from the big leagues, with some of our young prospects. Well, there's a reporter that got wind of it and decided that was a big story. It ended up becoming, ESPN ran with it. Like, what are these guys doing? The crazy thing now is, like, a lot of organizations do stuff with the SEAL community now. It's kind of cool now. It was not cool when we did it. But what's really cool, and it's awesome, in my office, I've got on the wall, I've got a framed knife that the group presented to us. And then the picture next to it, I've got a picture of the playoff game from 2013. So that was in the fall of 2012. 2013, we break the streak. We win 90-some games. And just think about the significance of when we kind of feel like you're at your lowest, darkest, or whatever else, and then what God can do with it. And it really galvanized us to commit to each other and how we were navigating. So that's a long-winded way of answering your question, Mike, of both talking about a different approach, something where the narrative kind of probably got out of control, and then also dealing with some crap along the way. And then what God can do with that in terms of what, you know, how we navigate and how we lean into that.
Kyle, can you talk a little bit about the types of players, the types of young men that you find in the lowest levels of the minors? So, you know, A-ball, I think there's a couple levels of A-ball now, and then AA. I've got a little bit of experience here just vicariously through a friend of mine, a college friend of mine. His son came out of college, was playing A-ball, and I think he went from A-ball all the way to the majors. It was either 2 years or 1 year. He really went quickly in the Padres organization. And now he's in AAA ball for the Mariners. But my impression was that, you know, you don't see some of these guys very long, right? I mean, they're either moving up or they're moving down or they go away. So can you talk a little bit about the types of young men you encounter and how much that affected your approach when you took over control of a farm system?
When I talk with different people and they're like, well, it's the tip of the spear, it's the best, and so that you must be dealing with. The reality is we're just dealing with more physically gifted from the tip of the spear. We're dealing with people. Right. And that's what was cool for me is, you know, I think you take the population of guys at that level, you are weeding some things out for sure, but it's still a broad capture of America and not even America, because we're talking about an international game. So as far as, you know, whether it's a 16-year-old kid that we've just signed out of the Dominican, or an 18-year-old high school kid, or a 23-year-old fifth-year senior that we've drafted that are in that spot, it's a wide range. And some of them are really mature dudes that have their heads screwed on straight and are going to maximize their ability. And to be honest, probably are going to realize sooner rather than later that they can make a lot more money doing something else, because it's not going to be in that career. And some of them are, God's just blessed them with some freak talent, and the infrastructure that's there to leverage that talent consistently and maximize that talent is not there. And so what we recognized was our job is to make sure, ultimately, it's to build that infrastructure so that the skill on the field can play out as consistently as possible. And that requires different things for different guys. Same goals we're pursuing, same basic ways to get there, but meeting guys where they're at and helping them move along in that journey was going to be different across the board, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So you got a lot of, the guys from the Dominican, like you said, they could be 16, 17 years old and, you know, phenomenally talented, obviously, to make it that far at such a young age. But these are young guys. And they're in a new country. I mean, maybe they've been in the States for a couple of years, but maybe not. They're going to be at a particular level of the minors for probably less than a season in many cases, right? So you'll have them for just a matter of months or maybe a year. And so how do you pour into these guys? How do you develop them, not just their baseball skills, but other skills that they need to be successful in a very difficult lifestyle? I mean, they're on the move all the time, right? And they're not making much money. I mean, we tend to think of baseball players making a lot of money. Not these guys, right?
The first part of it is getting a group of men, meaning coaches and leaders, who value this and want to impact it. Because it's easy to get drawn to the swing or the delivery or how fast or how hard he throws, whatever else. and to say, do we really believe that these are you know, competitive separators? And that was one of the things that I always try to communicate. As I share with our guys, I said, look, this philosophy isn't some utopian feel good, you know, I just want to give back and help. It's like, we believe this is a competitive separator. We believe that developing men of character, people that we can bet on, allows your skill to show up more consistently, both the top end and the consistency of it, and it's going to help us win games. Now, beyond that, do I think we're going to build better fathers, husbands, coaches? For sure. Do I think we're going to impact communities? Do I think we're going to impact next generation because of it? For sure. Because what I've also realized too is, like, a bunch of coaches are coaching. Why? Because they want to help people get better and go win games. And so if you have too much of a, hey, I just want to help people be better people long term, it's like, well, that's too big of a gap. I can't make that connection. And to be honest, a bunch of our players are like, dude, whatever, I don't care. I want to get to the big leagues. So how do we make that a tangible goal? So making it clear that it mattered to us, finding people that they valued it as well. And so then it's a matter of making sure that all of everything you do is aligned around that. So whether it be what we communicated, standards that we expected, time and energy spent in the development space, whether that be on field, off field, making sure that on field messages reflected these things as well, making sure that our development plans reflected this as well, that it wasn't just, you know, throw harder, run faster, hit it further type of things, but it was also developing you as a man, you know, your vision as a player, but what about your vision as a man? What about your vision as a teammate slash leader and in the clubhouse and how you're impacting people? And so making sure that this was, because I think what happens a lot of times is we can say, hey, this matters to us. And then we go do our days and so focus on technical, tactical things. And it's like, no, you're telling me what matters to me based on your time and energy, what you're spending on. And we wanted to make sure that those things were reflected in everything we did. And again, that can be as small as making sure we were reinforcing something in an on-field instruction setting or part of their specific development plan, or, hey, we're going to spend some time today as a team talking about topic X, which you're sitting there going, what's that have to do with baseball? Well, as we talk through it, we're going to realize what the connection is, but we are going to be intentional about setting aside time for that.
Okay. So this is about to take a turn. And what I mean is, you're informing me right now. I don't know if Chris is thinking about this either, but so just in all full disclosure, Chris and I have been wrestling through our target audience for this podcast. And it hit me recently that I think it's these young adult guys, probably late 20s, early 30s, which might be a little older than the guys you might be working with. But there are a lot of similarities what you just described in terms of what these guys you're working with and the pressures they're experiencing, the expectations, all that kind of stuff. And they're similar to other young adult guys too, that we're trying to encourage and say, hey, there's power in Christ. That's where empowered manhood comes from. You may feel disempowered. You may feel weak or lack confidence in certain ways, but there is real reason if you have the Holy Spirit in you to have confidence and boldness in your faith and to become a man empowered by the Spirit, right? And then I love what you said with regards to meeting guys where they're at too, by the way. That stuck out to me. I love that idea. So let me paint, I guess, a picture of who I think is listening right now, the guys that are our target. So that young guy, he's either just married or married and has new kids, so newer family. Probably he attends church, probably thinks it's a really good thing to go to church, especially for his kids and for his family. Yet he probably doesn't have a whole lot of confidence in handling scriptures himself. And so he lacks some confidence there. He lacks some confidence and maybe feels inadequate in leading his family. Okay. But he may perform well at work, although there is a lot of pressure there too to perform. But typically, a lot of these guys, I feel, can want to escape there in some ways. That's where they might get their strokes. You know, that's where their ego gets stroked, et cetera. So I'm just curious, as you think back on your experience with the Pirates and what we were just talking about there, what would be your primary message to that guy?
You know, it's funny, our wives and kids don't really care what, you know, about any of that. You're right. right. Like, I don't care that you're the assistant GM or that you've got responsibility over 500 people or that people think you're great. Like, right now, you're not listening to me, so I think you suck. So, you know, I think our wives and our kids can humble that and expose some vulnerabilities for us. So, you know, I think as you're talking, as I reflect on our guys, a few thoughts come to mind. I think the first is that if we come back to identity, right? Like, who am I? And ultimately, whose am I? And if I don't have that question answered, I'm going to get sideways or derailed somewhere. I think as guys, we're wired to want to perform and achieve. I think we're also wired to earn. So I think those things make it really hard for us to accept the gift of grace. It's like, yeah, but what do I have to do? But no, I have to. And so it's really hard for us to receive that gift. It's really hard for our identity to not be wrapped up in what we do or what we accomplish or how we perform. And so if I'm off course on that to some way, it's going to show up down the road. It's why it's easier for a lot of us as men to focus on work as opposed to at home. Like at work, I'm sorry, the guys I'm leading, the people I'm working with are not a threat to revealing who I really am. My wife, very much so. My wife knows me better than anybody. She can expose who I am as a man. At work, it's achieve and earn, and I've got measurables, and that's easy and comfortable for us. At home, like, what does that mean? What does that look like? At work, I probably potentially have some type of power over the people I'm leading. And, you know, it's amazing. I spend a ton of time around people who believe in servant leadership, and then we underestimate really how much I get away with the fact that I'm the boss. Not because I'm a bad person or exposing or taking advantage of anything. I'm not as aware that people are following you because you're the boss. And at home, nobody cares. Like your kids don't care, but your wife doesn't care. They're following you because of who you are more so than positional authority. And just as we're talking, I think that's the first thing as we're talking is this identity piece of who I am. And ultimately, if it's not anchored in whose you are and what God's done, like, I do know how you go through life. It's really hard. There's a ton of friction. There's a ton of, not that there isn't as a believer. It's just, we make it harder than it needs to be. Things don't make as much sense if I try to go down that road. The second thing that, as you're talking about, as far as target audiences, I think through this, and just as you shared in terms of like comfort with scripture, comfort, like this isn't some complex thing. God tells us what we need to do. Know my word, know my truth.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you're going to have a hard time navigating some things. Well, how do I know that I need to spend time in it? Connect and communicate with me. I want to do life with you. I want to have a relationship. Okay, that's prayer piece. Am I committed to it? How disciplined? I mean, this is the thing we referenced earlier about, you know, discipline is not a sexy term anymore. We want to focus on inspiration and do I feel moved and whatever else. It's like, no, show up every day and do the basics and commit to the basics and see how your life's changed. But that's not sexy. It's not exciting. It's not, you know, I want more. I want it now. I want all those types of things, as opposed to go put in the time and commit to some things. And really that commitment is just trying to know him better so that I can know myself better. I heard somebody say recently, they're telling a story about blanking on the guy's name right now, former slave, ended up doing a ton of amazing stuff with Peanuts. And when he first started pushing this forward,
I can't remember. The name is on the
tip of my tongue. Carver. George Washington Carver.
And the argument was like, who are you equipped to talk about what to do with Peanuts or whatever else? And his response was, like the question was, what do you know about Peanuts? He goes, nothing. But I know everything about the one who created Peanuts because of his commitment to the Bible, his commitment to prayer, his commitment to relationship. And it's like that is, and when we reframe who God is, it reframes who we are, and it reframes what this life is about. Again, not that it's easy, but it starts to make sense. There starts to be consistency and integrity in everything in my life. I can navigate the home and the work because I'm supposed to be the same guy in both. The answer is not that complex. Living it out every day? Yeah, it's really hard.
But you know what? I think
reflect what matters most, it changes how we look at it.
Yeah. Sorry to cut you off. I was going to say, you're right. It isn't that hard. I think it's our sinful nature and the way we twist things to get what we want or to achieve our simple desires that complicates things. Yep. And then we kind of have to untangle that ball of yarn to get back to this very simple truth.
Yeah, and that simple truth. So we were doing a think tank one time. Again, we brought in different leaders and high performers from a lot of different arenas when I was with Pittsburgh. So we'd bring, you know, 30 people in and we just talk about best practices of excellence. And I remember one time we were doing a session, we had a chaplain in the room and he shares at one point, he goes, look, everybody believes in God. And you could feel the room tense up in a hurry. A lot of believers in the room, but a lot of not believers. And you could just feel the room going, oh, the chaplain's going to go off now. And ultimately, what he shared was, he said, no, either you believe something bigger than you created all of this, and there's a creator of the universe, or you believe you are him. Coming back to the original sin. And it's like, if I remember that I'm not God, you know, I've seen lots of studies that who do we think about most? We think about ourselves more than anything. And so it's just the ability to get out of that and not have me be the center of the universe. And if we're honest as men, I like having myself as the center of the universe a lot. And it creates a lot of challenges and conflict down the road.
Kyle, I want to take the conversation in a little different direction because I'm intrigued by something. So you strike me as an innovator. I mean, you came into Pittsburgh, you had a friend in the organization, you had the general manager who brought you with him, but you had a very different approach that you wanted to take with the farm system. And you couldn't do it all yourself, right? I mean, you can't go team by team, player by player, and do all this. You got to work through other people. And a lot of these people probably didn't agree with you or didn't understand the approach you were trying to take. So how are you able to accomplish this? How are you able to get buy-in from guys throughout the organization? Okay, now I realize the Pirates farm system was in somewhat of a shambles, right? And the organization had not been doing very well. So you had some ability to try something new. But how did you convince a bunch of traditional baseball guys to do something radically different and to get total buy-in where they would really do this and not just pay lip service to it? And then when you're not looking, go back and do something else.
That's a great question. And I would say, depending on who you ask, probably some people say great and some people say not so great in terms of the execution of that. But so I'd tell a quick story to bring this to light. When I first got hired, I talked with a bunch of people smarter than me, say, hey, any words of wisdom? And the one unanimous piece of advice was take the first year and assess what you have. And I'm just not wired that way. And so I wanted to go in day one, this is who we are going to be.
Right.
Now, what I did do was I gave people an opportunity to find out, did people align with that vision or not? We didn't go in making changes of people. We didn't just go and say, hey, you used to do it this way, we're doing it this way. You know, I think what I tried to do from day one is craft an idea of who, an identity, who are we going to be? And also identify, you know, what are the key principles? What are the key stakes that I'm putting in the ground that are going to guide everything we do? Yeah, we were putting in some processes. As I look back, there's even some processes I probably wouldn't put in day one because there was a process there. And let's see if it works better with these, if it aligns with these principles. So that's what we did day one. I had a coach quit the first day of spring training. I had a coach quit in May, the second month of the season. It was the first time somebody that I really got on this kick of trying to read and learn. Somebody gave me the book, Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And they talked about, hey, if you're doing your job right as a leader, you never have to fire anybody because they'll deselect out. I'm like, I must be killing it right now. But I think what we were able to do was to be able to craft an idea of who we were going to be and then see who was buying and who wasn't. Part of that was, you know, you mentioned in terms of what we inherited, I was amazed and dumbfounded how many times I got the response, that's not how we do it here. I'm like, did you do understand they hired a new general manager, a new assistant GM, a new farm, like longest streak in professional sports and I get in the playoffs. Like, why are we defending this? But it was a great lesson for me as people, our resistance to change, our defending of what we are doing. It's just easy, again, coming back to as men, it's really easy for us to defend what we're doing.
Right.
And not be honest about how much success we're actually having or whatever. So that struck me. I think the other thing that crystallized for me over time was this idea, and we would talk about it, that people buy into the man before they buy into the mission. So people were ultimately, it wasn't about my ideas. It wasn't about my communication. I mean, all those things matter, but they don't matter as much as saying, okay, is there congruence between what we're saying and who you are? Am I buying into this person? Do I trust this person? Do I trust this guy's heart? And that you have to show up every day and do life with people for that to happen. I think too often we rely on our words and think we're going to convince people. There's study after study that shows we're irrational, emotional decision makers. Yet we spend all this time trying to convince people and recognize at the end of the day, people are looking for connection and want to be able to trust. I had to convince people that I had their best interests at heart and they could trust me. And then ultimately, it wasn't so much that what we were doing was wrong or that this is the answer as much as just saying, if we were starting over, is this how we would do it? Let's just have some intentionality and have some thought and discussion around what makes sense as opposed to just have it. You know, this idea of default or design, we can either just do it off of default and we just keep doing it, or some intentionality and that we're going to be proactive with why we're doing what we're doing. And I realized that I was going to need to lead that charge because I almost had to give people permission to be courageous and do something different. But I couldn't just force people to do that. I had to include some people in that conversation on what it was ultimately going to look like.
I think your approach translates very well to a broad range of situations. I mean, it's not just a baseball thing, right? So you cast a vision. Sounds like, you know, you made it clear what your goals were. So we're going to do something different. Here's where I believe we can end up. You gave them some specifics on why you were taking that approach, gave them the opportunity to raise objections. But like you said, ultimately, people will process information and they'll apply logic to some degree, right? But as you said, we're not 100% logical beings, right? We're not Mr. Spock. So ultimately, they had to buy into you. Can I trust this guy? Am I going to give this guy an opportunity? And I think we can do that in a variety of situations. And ultimately, we have to have confidence in ourselves, right? And in our maker, right? If we feel that God is calling us to something and, you know, we've done our homework and we really feel called to this, yes, we have to persuade other people, but we also have to give them an opportunity to get to know us and to buy into us and the vision that God's planted in us.
Yeah, I think as you're talking, Chris, I think to start with, in terms of just, you know, I believe excellence is excellence. Like, people ask, what's the best book I should read? It's like the Bible tells us it's the best peak performance manual there is. So these ideas translate across different. And I think a lot of times as people, we get so rigid in our world.
Right.
Go spend some time with somebody in a different world and so you can start to see what the principle is as opposed to the specific methods.
Right.
But I do think as you're talking there in terms of, and hey, I got way better at, for me, it wasn't so much my principles, my values, my vision changed. I got better at understanding people and navigating that better, understanding the differences in people. And again, coming back to my wife's a huge part of that. So my methods, my tactics, my approach, my understanding got way better as opposed to just, hey, this is where we're going and continue to just be the guy that's clearing a lane through the brush. Quick side story on that. So my wife, we are complete opposites. Every personality test we do, we are complete opposites. And she read a book by Bob Goff called Love Does. And she said, Kyle, you need to read this. And I'm like, it's a light blue cover with balloons on it. It's called Love Does. I said, I'm not reading that book.
Yeah. And Goff is, Goff's probably a very different personality. I mean, I've seen him. He's very different than you.
Well, what was cool. So she kept wearing me down. Finally, I'll read it. We're actually together 10-year anniversary. We went to Hawaii. I did not get much time away, but we said we were going to commit to that. And so we were there. And so I'm reading this book. Completely blew me away. Partly to understand, hey, we're just different people. We got to understand that and embrace that. And part of that was a realization, like I would joke with people, I said, I don't need 100 of me running around. We'll drive each other nuts. But part of it was just Bob's simple example of the gospel. Love people. Like, we're making this to be more complex. It is love people, which the only way I can do that is if I love God, right? I can't do that alone. And it really freed me up in terms of just better understanding where people are at without having judgment. Like, it doesn't mean I changed my standards or I didn't have a critical eye or have high expectations, but I better appreciated where people were coming from. And what's really cool about Bob, for those who are listening, I reached out to Bob and I said, hey, we'd love to have you come in and do something with our team. Bob does a ton of stuff in Uganda with trying to impact the justice system in Uganda because there has not been one. And he immediately replied, hey, love to, do you want to go to Uganda? Like, he just lives his life. But there's that congruence again between what he says and who he is and what he does. I mean, he's not trying to be somebody different. He's embraced who he is and he lives that out. And I think when we can embrace that in terms of how God's made me, that I think that's part of, Chris, you touched on the confidence piece. And I think sometimes we mistake confidence as certainty that it's going to work out. And that's not confidence. We're not God. But when I can embrace that I'm not God and God's uniquely created me for this time in this space, and I'm going to rely on him through that, I think it can give us that confidence to be able to navigate some change and some challenge and whatever it may be.
Man. Oh my gosh. So good. Okay. So, so many thoughts in my head right now. Number one, you mentioned something. There's a book that I read by Henry Cloud called Integrity. Great book. Yeah, I assume you probably read it. One of the ways he defines integrity, which I think is so perfect, it's not doing what you say when no one's looking. It's actually being true to how God made you so that you can maintain your integrity. Or think of, and he uses the analogy of a fighter jet or a jet that's being designed by the Air Force. What do they have to find out first? Well, what is it going to be used for? What are the G-forces involved? What are the stress, you know, all the different things that, are there going to be enemy attacks, all this stuff. They have to consider all these things before they actually start designing it. And then they design it for that specific purpose. And God did that for us. And when we live outside of the purpose God has for us or that he's designed us for, we lose integrity. Just like, you know, a cargo plane would lose its integrity in a dogfight. You know what I mean? It would fall apart or very slowly get shot to, you know, into oblivion. So anyway, to your point, like that, man, knowing who you are, I just think that's so important, especially as we're thinking about our audience.
And I love as you're talking, Mike, I mean, it comes back to more importantly, and this is the George Washington Carver piece of knowing our maker. Like if I know know our maker, I can better get a sense. You know, everybody talks about self-awareness. I think self-awareness is huge, but self-awareness apart from awareness of him.
Yes.
There's going to be some disconnect. And I think the other part is you're talking where, and that's where we try to continue to, I think as men, we get really good at compartmentalizing. I think we get really good at putting that in a box there and put that in a box there. And again, it's an overgeneralization. Each of us are different in how we do it, but I think it's easier for us to do that as opposed to an integrated life. You know, integrity at its core is this alignment piece as opposed to a good character. Not to minimize good character, it matters, but mm-hmm. this idea, I think we've bastardized this term integrity by just being character, which then ultimately the world equates with nice. Like that was one of the things we talk with our guys. This isn't about building nice men. Mm-hmm. Now, are there situations where we need to navigate things differently and kindness matters? I mean, that's we talk about fruit of the spirit, but that's not the goal. This goal is championship men, which is an integrated person. And ultimately, that integration has to start with God. And again, I want everybody to understand, as a flawed man who knows there's times where I'm really integrated and there's times where I'm not, it's ultimately a reflection on me, whether I am. But that is the answer and where the aspiration has to be.
And then the other thing that I observed as you were sharing too, and Chris, I think you guys, as you were talking, this came to my mind as well, is that you were talking about relationships and building trust with people and building trust with people hit me. And I think either you said it or it popped in my mind, but it involves sacrifice, which means because you're committing to something specific. So like, for example, if a buddy of mine asked me to go over to his house and help him build a retaining wall, for example, I'm committed to that one specific purpose. I'm going to go in and we're going to align to accomplish that goal together. But it means I'm not cutting my grass that day. It means I'm not going golfing that day. It means there's something else that I'm sacrificing, putting aside to align with this person specifically. That's the hardest part, I think, for a lot of young folks today with regard to relationships, the commitment involved in being aligned with someone in relationship to truly love them as you're in relationship with them. Because I think, you know, social media and all these other distractions pull at us saying, no, this is where you need to get your meaning. This is where you need to get, this is what you need to do. This is, and there's this fear of commitment because they might be, you know, FOMO, they might be fear of missing out on something else that might bring them to something greater or give them more significance or approval, whatever that might be.
Yeah. Well, I think as you're talking about, again, this comes back to the Bob Goff talking about just love does what is let it showing up and loving people, which is ultimately a getting outside of myself, which at the core we're flawed, sinful people, and we want to focus on self. And so that's reliance on him to be able to navigate that. But as you're talking about, I think this is part of what is we use it a lot in Pittsburgh. I use it a lot with different leaders, is this reminder of the environment we're operating in versus the environment we want to be operating in. Meaning, what does society say matter versus what does God say matter? And if we don't recognize that those are two different things and that is a disconnect, then we're going to get sucked in. I think it happens in church all the time, where we end up chasing culture instead of, no, this is who we're going to be. A friend of mine, Tim Elmore, has done a ton of, you mentioned something about the youth today or whatever else. I don't think this is a youth thing. I think this is a society thing. Like, this is all of us.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
And so Tim Elmore has done a ton of studies on generational differences, but one of the things, and he's really smart, tons of really good resources. One of the best things that I've heard him share was he's talked about the scene that we live in today. And it's an acronym. And so the S is that speed matters. We want things fast. Again, this isn't today's kids want things fast. We want things fast. I go through the drive-through in Chick-fil-A and I'm like, why can't I get my nuggets faster? Which means that slow is bad. The C is convenience. We want things easy. We want things comfortable. We want things. We don't want to have to work hard to get things. And again, if we're honest with ourselves as men, this is one of our biggest ways we avoid our responsibilities at home. I want things comfortable and convenient, which means the implication is that hard work is bad. The E is entertainment. We want things fun, exciting. I get bored easy. I'm on to the next thing if it doesn't matter, which implies that boring is bad. The N is nurture. We want things safe. We want things, you know, guaranteed, which implies that risk is bad. And then the last E is entitlement. We believe we deserve things, and therefore earning things or having to work for it is bad. If we're honest with ourselves, that's the environment we live in. And to be honest with us, our sinful nature gravitates to those things. This isn't a generational thing. This is a reality of all of us. And if we're honest with ourselves and we think about the life that God calls us to, if we think about the recipe for excellence, it is slow, it is hard, it is boring. You have to freaking earn it every day, and it requires risk. And so I think that's, again, coming back to, if I better understand the creator and what the ground rules are that he's created, I can better commit to playing that game as opposed to maybe the game that we just end up getting sucked into in life.
What was the name of that book and author again?
Tim Elmore is the author. I don't know which book he has shared that in. Okay. He's written quite a few books.
We'll link that in the show notes, though, for folks who want to check that out.
Yeah.
Because that's, wow.
Tim Elmore is a business. His company's Growing Leaders, worked with Maxwell for a long time. His focus is specifically developing leadership in young people.
That's great. Man, that is so... Kyle, you are ministering to me this morning, brother. I'm telling you what, I'm taking it in, brother. I needed this today. I needed this today. All right, so, man, okay, so it's already... we've been about an hour in, and I feel bad that we haven't touched on your consulting business, but at least tell us a little bit about it in case folks want to reach out and find out more. I mean, obviously, I mean, you just consulted with us in a sense. So I think they got a bit of a feel of that, but, yeah, tell us what you're up to today and where folks can connect with you and learn more.
After the 2019 season regime change, I got asked to go do something else. I'd say I was fired. I was, but that triggers some different people. At the end of the day, the business of baseball, time for, and it was time for a new season of life for us anyway. And so my wife said to, Heather said to me, she goes, look, because I was on the road 20 to 25 days a month for about 12 years. And she said, can you give me a year? As she said, actually, can you give me 6 months? I know you're not going to give me a year. Can you give me 6 months before you rush into whatever? And I said, sure. So this was end of November of 19. Well, February, March of 2020,
wow,
the world shuts down. And
she got more than six. She got more than a couple months.
She got more than a couple months. And what was really cool in that was in that time, you know, some different people reached out that I had spent some time with outside of baseball. And they're like, hey, you got some time now. Would you be willing to jump on a weekly call or come do something with my team or my business or whatever else? And the other thing that what happened was, you know, a couple of people reached out and said, hey, those think tanks you did with Pittsburgh, if you just keep doing those, that'd be awesome. And so just organically have Which is what I was doing with Pittsburgh. I was pouring into leaders and helping them try to be successful. Now I miss the responsibility of a team and moving a group of people towards something and having a win or a loss at the end of it.
But the
day to day of pouring into leaders and helping them drive their cultures, that's what I was doing at Pittsburgh. And so it's kind of been an organic outgrowth of that in the worlds of sport, business, military, education. So God has, through relationship, through connection, through opportunity, has done that. We're at a spot now where it's like, okay, my youngest is a junior in high school. What are we doing here the next couple of years? What do we want this consulting thing to look like? I haven't really wrapped around, hey, this is who we are and what we're doing, and we've got whatever else. I think I joked with you, Mike, when you first reached out, I don't have an online presence. It's not who I am. I don't envision having a significant online presence. But long story short, I am on LinkedIn. If you want to reach out to Mike, he can gladly pass along my email or cell phone. I'll engage and connect with whoever. My heart is, I want to help good leaders who are trying to drive great cultures. And whether that's an individual leader, whether that's an organization and coming in and helping, whether it's a keynote, a one-off training, or whether it's, hey, come in and provide a consultant lens, soup to nuts, on how we're doing things. My passion's helping. I think at the end of the day, every problem we have is a leadership problem. So my passion's helping leaders specifically. And again, I've helped men and women, but specifically for me, I believe as men, we are called to lead. That doesn't mean we are called to be in power. That doesn't mean we are called to be the boss. It doesn't mean we are called to have all the answers. It doesn't mean any of that, where we tend to twist this. But there's a leadership vacuum. We've got to step up and lead. And so I want to help people do that. And specifically, I got a soft spot for guys. And so, yeah, that's what I'm doing, and where you can find me. We will have a website at some point, but I don't envision you getting Twitter and everything else. I don't envision having at any time soon.
That's all good, man. That's all good. Say, okay, real quick, I want you to say that one more time. Would you help good leaders drive...
Good leaders trying to drive great cultures.
Yeah, good leaders. You want to help good leaders who are trying to drive great cultures. That is just, I love that. That's so well said. And in a world today where, you know, you need to be succinct in that one statement, how long did it take you to get down to that statement?
You know, it's funny. It was one of those where it actually came pretty quick. And then I'm like, it's got to be something better than that. And then, months of continuing to try to beat things up. But I think at the end of the day, and I think that's part of what I've realized with this, is we're looking for cool and catchy. And it's like, I think at the core, we're looking for truth and some simple honesty. And because we're getting tricked all over the place, so that when we hear something simple, it's like, I've got a friend who says all the time, we've been, you know, gamed into saying we got to have this, 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 and this. And then when somebody gives us a drink of water, we're like, this is unbelievable. This is what I've been looking for my whole life. And it's like, it's simple water. Let's not make it more complex than it needs to be.
That's what my wife says. She, you know, sometimes just a glass of cold water is just, it's amazing. Yeah. And she's right. You're right.
100%.
I was just, what did I see? An advertisement for Body Armor, which is the new kind of Gatorade type of drink, right? And it says superior hydration.
Yeah.
I don't think you get any more superior than water. H2O, man.
It's for the next best, greatest. And it's like, how do you want to be in a good spot physically? Make good food choices, hydrate, sleep, and move your body. Like, it's not... Now, we can go to some deeper levels, but let's do the basics before we want to go deeper than that. You want to talk about I really want to grow spiritually. Okay, read the Bible and pray and get in community. I mean, let's not overcomplicate it than it needs to be, but recognize that's discipline and it's commitment and it's monotonous and boring and all those things we talked about with the scene.
I love it. I love it. Man, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Kyle, for your time together today. I really appreciate it, man. Before we let you go, though, I want to pray for you and your family, and then we'll say goodbye. Father, you are so good. God, thank you so much, Lord, for Kyle. Thank you for the perspective that he brings, for the ways, Lord, that you have refined him over the years, humbled him over the years, maybe broken him in ways over the years, God, to be able to trust you more and have the, this perspective of Lord, that it's who you know that ultimately defines who you are. And Father, I'm just grateful for that reminder today. I'm grateful for Kyle, his ministry, the consulting agency that he does, Lord. Thank you for Heather and their family. Continue to provide for them, Father. Sustain them, Lord, in their journey and mission together. And God, thank you again for this time together. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Thank you so much, Kyle, for being with us.
No, pleasure. I appreciate it, guys. And if you guys need anything, don't hesitate to reach out.